Good morning, Jamie.
Morning, Keith. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Yeah, I'm in a good mood. Have been for a little while now. It's amazing how much the weather changes things for me. Like, I'm back to being a motivated person again. I don't just want to sleep all the time.
Yeah, same here, man. It's I love the summer. This is why I think I stay in Toledo. It's like, I love the summers here.
Mm-hmm.
The winters are why I want to move. But I think, like, once the summer hits, I kind of forget about how bad the winter was and how much I hated it and how gray and yucky it was. And then that's what gets me here for another year.
That makes sense. You just need to be a really young snowbird, you know, just find a place to go, have a second house. It'll work out fine.
Oh, man, I'm so old.
I mean, you are old, but that doesn't mean you would still be young in that demographic. So
that sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, what have you been up to the last couple of weeks?
A lot of stuff. I finished the tattoo UI stuff for asynchronous standups.
Nice.
That was a lot more involved than I thought it was going to be. Just basically how we display stuff on the UI, and there's some JavaScripty stuff that's all based on like the participant ID. And when you add new participants, you don't have an ID yet, blah, blah, blah. So I had to switch a bunch of things around. But yeah, got that finished, deployed, and I've added several people to the beta, asynchronous stand-up beta. And then I've been trying to implement Flipper Cloud. I spent about an hour and a half or so a few days ago, so not too much time. It's pretty neat. It's pretty cool. I like the UI for it. And this is where Flipper Cloud is where you could put basically your configuration for what features you have in your app, you know, and flip them on and off based on users or percentage of users or percentage of time.
Yep.
And then eventually turn it on for everybody and then remove that feature flag from your app. And so I moved over to Flipper Cloud, and for some reason, everything's just turned on for everybody, not on production, just this is on staging.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't had time to look through why that is yet. So I'm obviously doing something wrong, but, it's pretty simple. It's just kind of a drop-in replacement for what you have, you know, what people have currently. So.
Gotcha. I've never actually used the Flipper Gem. I think last time I was working with like feature flipping things, I just had my own like singleton module that did all that stuff in Ruby class. But
yeah. Yeah. So yeah, just flip that on. And I want to use that because I'm going to have a lot of users in and out of this feature. So this will make it nice to have a nice little web UI to do that with.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know he was just letting you kind of, he's like, hey, just go nuts and give me feedback on how it is. Like, it's not super documented, and he wasn't, you know, did you have any real feedback for him from that?
Yeah, I've kind of created a little, as I do when I try things out, a little journal as I'm going through and just kind of writing down my thoughts, like, oh, I'm confused by this. And like, for instance, I couldn't find the add feature button. I knew there was like a way to add, you know, name your feature and start adding users to it, but it's kind of hidden, mm-hmm. which it seems like that should be like the call to action, like add a. So, just things like tiny things like that. Some bigger things was, he has this idea of environments. So you can have, you know, development, staging, production yep. environment. And I wanted it to, you know, I didn't want to set my features up, you know, on each environment separately.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to kind of override certain things on like a development, turn it on for everybody. Staging, just have a few of these teams. So,
well, if everything defaults to on, then wouldn't that just kind of go back? Wouldn't you be able to do that though? Like you go to staging and you just like flip one of them off.
Well, the way he thought of this, John Neunemaker thought of this. And it's actually kind of, it's not backwards. It's just not how I thought. So I thought, oh, you know, you do it for development and then you kind of push, you promote that to staging and production is how I was thinking of it. But he has it kind of flipped so that it's production is kind of your main source of truth. And then you can override certain things on the other environments. So it was nice.
Yep. Yeah.
But that was a little confusing at first. There's no real documentation around it. You kind of just had to fumble your way through and figure it out, which I understand that kind of comes down to polish.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, but other than that, it's really good.
Cool.
I'm liking it. So, yeah, that's pretty much all I did for Tattoo. For Chronic, I worked, I just started kind of getting back into it on the website of things. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to turn the start and stop the timer. Basically all I've only worked like an hour on it. So, but getting back up to speed and looking at my code from, you know, 3 months ago is not good, but
the code on the React side or
the code on the React side. Yeah. So I didn't get far on that. It kind of reminds me of like getting back into code after even a few days off is mentally draining and challenging, but that's kind of my plan for next week is heads down on Chronic and start and stopping of the web timer.
Cool. Yeah. Getting back into Chronic has been really nice for me.
Yeah.
It's a snowball effect, right? Like once you get going with it a little bit, you're like, you get kind of excited about it and you want to get back in there and start just adding new features and cleaning stuff up. And yeah, I feel like more I work on it, the more I'm working on it. Like it compounds.
Right. Exactly. I've been trying in my back of my head to kind of focus on a singular area during these sprints that before in between we talk. So Chronic is kind of going to be my main focus for the next, my next sprint. So
cool.
How about you? How have you been? How's Chronic coming along?
Chronic's going pretty good for me. So one thing, I told you to hold me accountable to streaming, which you did, the previous week. And then I just didn't anymore. And that was a conscious thing. I decided that it kind of wasn't like, I got so much work done when I wasn't streaming that I was like, man, screw this. Like, I want to work on Chronic right now. The streaming thing's not really doing me any good at the moment. Like, it was good to like kickstart me and get me back into working on the project. But now I'm just better off just working on it.
Right.
Like, I implemented nearly all of the workflow, like, interesting parts when I was just sitting at the counter at my in-law's house, like, waiting on Kendra to get back from, like, a bridal party kind of thing. And I was like, man, that was really productive. I didn't talk to anybody. There was nobody around here. Like, I was just turned some music on and went to town on this. And yeah, I got some pretty neat stuff done. I think the actual, like, workflow process itself is pretty much done. It's a little
on the API side, you're saying?
Well, not the API, but yeah, the API side. So like the modeling of it inside of just pure Elixir land, like nothing exposed to the outside yet.
Right.
That is pretty much done. There's kind of an amazing amount of like duplication that sort of happens across everything because it turns out every lifecycle event is basically the same. Everything kind of, they all sort of do the same thing. So I had to get to a point where I was like, okay, I can extract out like these really repetitive things that I'm doing. I'll extract these out into some helper functions and then I'll just call these. And then each one of these things is a specific like procedure that has to happen. So like, I shouldn't be too mad at myself if it's like these procedures happen to be combinations of these helper functions with the state changed and different things. I'm like, I would much rather be explicit in this part than metaprogram myself into a really dumb hole. So that was kind of the approach I ended up taking. I was like, I'll extract some stuff out, move these things around. As long as I can see what's going on and I understand why it's happening, then I'm good to go. And turns out, I think that pattern matching inside of function declaration gets a little unwieldy. Like it just looks kind of bad after you're matching on too many things. But
right, it's kind of like trying to spot the difference between multiple functions that could just be like one variable or something.
Yeah, I have a lot more little things that are like just a comment above an implementation of a function that is just like step has completed, no next step, or step has completed, you know, next step continuous, stuff like that. Like there's, so I can tell like what this implementation's important for. And yeah, I'm like, that kind of sucks. But when you read them, you're like, okay, this is pretty similar. This is good. I, yeah, the, there's no more steps, whatever. But yeah, it's pretty neat. I think the integrations thing is pretty cool because it's written in such a way now that you can use any bit of, you can use any anonymous function you wanted to, as long as it meets a certain signature. So it has to handle like, what does it have to handle? I think it just basically just takes in the state and the event type or whatever. But so any function that can takes those two arguments and knows what to do with them, you could use as an integration for any lifecycle event at any point. And that includes just defining anonymous functions and throwing them in there.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Neat. Yeah. Like that could be powerful. It'll be pretty neat. We'll have, you know, specific integrations that you and I write that are like first party integrations.
Right.
And those will be modules, obviously, somewhere, but it'll get to the point. Like I was talking to somebody about this at an open hack. I was like, one of the ideas I want to have for this is I would love to have an integration that like interacts with a functions as a service kind of thing. Right. And somebody could just like, you know, there will be some, I don't know, like a Docker or a Kubernetes cluster or something that can just like spin up a container, run a piece of code and it do what you want it to do. And like give us the ability to run that stuff in isolation. So users aren't like running over each other or getting access to things they shouldn't.
So you could build sort of serverless type of stuff. Is that what you're thinking? Like somebody could do some Lambda, AWS Lambda stuff. And
yeah, more or less.
That's neat.
I think that gives us like obviously infinite, you know, sort of power there. We would probably want to tone it down a little bit, not to give people too much that they could work with just because the paradox of like having too many options. But it might be good to have one that is like, you know, danger zone. Like you can do literally anything here. Don't be evil. So that's one of the cooler things that kind of came up. The tests for these things are a little weird because there's a little bit of timing things involved. And I did give us like a backdoor into workflows so that we could substitute in a different timer for tests.
Nice. So it mocked out timer.
I didn't actually do it at any point. Like I didn't actually mock out a timer because everything I needed to do, I could do really quickly with our system timer, which is the default that a workflow uses. But it is there as a thing. Cause I'm like, eventually this could be pretty useful. But right now I'm like, I don't really want to take the time to write this like test timer. So I left it there so I wouldn't have to modify things later if we decided something we want to add, and it was not a big deal. I could just pass around a timer module and it basically just allowed me to not hard couple on the system timer. There's a timer piece of state that just goes around and it holds its own, like what's my module type stuff like that. So it was pretty cool. I'm pretty proud of it. There's parts that are a little ugly, but in functional, you know, like in its actual function, I think it's pretty good.
That's awesome. So, what's the, how has the, like, say I just want to start a timer.
Mm-hmm.
How would the API change now that we're wrapping kind of the timer stuff with workflow?
So this is where I was thinking about leaving a standard timer in the API. And I talked to you about this. And this is a little bit of a transitional thing, because even though nobody is using this, I still want to be in the practice of not breaking the application if we ship a big change.
Yep, so, I agree.
You know, we're like moving forward. And eventually, once things are in place to replace it, then we can take away features. But so right now the timer thing just works fine. We have our timers event that you can like trigger and go from there. Workflow wise, it's going to have to look kind of similar. I think we're going to have some sort of event that you can send that is like workflow start, and you have to give us a workflow template ID, and then it can, you know, hydrate itself and create the workflow process that'll run in the background and manage these things. It'll feel very much, they have, since the system timer and the workflow have a very similar external API, like the public API is very similar. The way that you can interact with it from the application here shortly is going to feel very, very similar.
Yeah. I wonder if we have like built-in templates. So the template ID could be like single timer or something.
Yeah.
Or, you know, chronic single timer or something. And that just fires off a single timer, with a workflow so that somebody wouldn't have to create a template for that.
Yeah. And well, one of the things is that a template contains, so each template step contains its own duration. And so we can do ad hoc workflows if we wanted somebody to be able to like on the fly, like change the duration of something.
Yeah, we could make it. So you pass in that definition of that template alongside some other API. So like, start a workflow, and then here's the workflow, how it should look.
Oh, you mean like not even, like you're not even storing this in the database, you're just passing in an entire representation?
Well, no, the API would store it in the database first. It would kind of do the work of like, so my...
You want to create and run. Is
exactly. You don't want to do like all these steps where like, okay, hit the create workflow templates endpoint and create the template, get that template ID back, then start that template. And all that does is create a timer where if we could make shortcuts in an API to say like, oh, here, go ahead and start this workflow and here's how this workflow works or looks like, that might be helpful. I'm not sure yet. I'm just kind of thinking of this because I'm working on the start and stop of a timer, which I'm obviously working off the old, quote unquote, old timer API stuff. So I'm just kind of thinking like, okay, what can we make this just as easy as the existing API with the timers?
Yeah,
with
I think
timer workflow. Or maybe we keep the timer API around indefinitely. I don't know. But
yeah, well, just, it sort of depends. Like, we have this sort of branching path we can go down, right? Are we like a generic timers thing? Are we focused more on people creating things that are repeatable, like they want to do multiple right. times? So I think the timer endpoint that we currently have for just like spinning up a single timer and going is pretty good if you just want to run a single timer. But I think in a lot of cases, people are going to have like a workflow that they want to do. Like, this is just a thing that I do, you know, like I do 4 Pomodoros in the morning. So here's my, you know, my Pomodoro right. thing that goes off and it's configured to be repeatable. And when I'm done, it orders me lunch and, you know, I go from there. But like this,
I cannot wait to play around with this thing.
That has been my funny like selling point to people. Like I tell them like, what you'd be okay, imagine your whole work day, you use Pomodoros for this, and what you want to do is that like on the second to last Pomodoro, you want it to order a pizza to have it delivered to your house, and then on the end of your last Pomodoro, you want it to text your wife to tell her that you're on your way home. And I'm like, all this stuff just automated, right? Like, and the rest of it, it's just looping in the background, doing the like, okay, I'm going to work for a little bit, take a little break, work for a little bit, take a little break. But you have these things integrated at very specific spots inside of your workflow that you just want to be automated.
It could also turn off your lights at the last Pomodoro, signify that you're done.
Bingo. Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds fun, man.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your plans for the next, did you do anything else in the last?
Not really. I was pretty much, just, yeah, working on this stuff. I'm trying to think if there is anything else I actually worked on. Nope, not really. I mean, I looked at Proton Native as like a Mac app thing to just see what it would do, but I didn't actually install it. And yeah, I've just been kind of preparing myself to finish this feature and sort of thinking about things. But yeah, I haven't really done much besides actually work on the workflows.
Good work, man. Good work. So what's your plans for the next few weeks?
I want to finalize this because it's not currently worked into the API. So I want to finalize what that like workflow start API with the WebSocket and stuff looks like, which will probably turn into us creating a couple of default workflows for people to use. And then we'll have to have some sort of limited API, at least for now, which you and I have talked about using GraphQL with to sort of ship that data over to the applications so that somebody can know like, oh, I want to start this like Pomodoro workflow, which is, you know, the canonical, like easy one we can make for everybody. So I want to finish that. And then I need to add tests around the database template portion of it. So the workflow template steps, like right now, there's no like validations or anything around that stuff because I've just been using one in memory. This is the beautiful thing about working with Elixir and the fact that unlike when we work in Railsland and Active Record is like a core part of what we're doing, we never like use an Ecto change set for these right. kind of things that we're working with. At the end of the day, we just want the data from this, so we're going to work on this thing as it's a map or a struct, right. which is just a named map. So exactly. that makes it a lot easier for me to go and test the functionality of these things without really caring about the database storage thing. Occasionally, I would run into things where it was like I would have to substitute in an empty array for an association because it was giving me like an Ecto association not loaded struct in place of that. And I'm like, okay, that's fine, but I'll know to load these things when I'm going to use them. So that doesn't really matter to the workflow itself. I'm never going to pass it an unloaded workflow template.
Workflow template.
Yeah. So yeah, got stuff like that. I just want to finish this PR. I might go in and do some documentation. It kind of bugs me that my linter in Vim tells me that I'm doing things wrong because I haven't documented all of the modules and functions and stuff.
Yeah, that would be nice.
So I'm probably going to go in and add some docs to it. And I think if I can ship this PR and add a bunch of docs, then I think that puts me in a good spot that you and I can talk about it. You know, next time we sit down and really hash out things, I think we should probably work on maybe some design stuff and figure out exactly what we want these workflows, the UX, not the workflows, to feel like, so that we can start working on that.
Yeah, that might be a good, that'd be fun to kind of do in person, I feel like.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
We should plan on that. Either I can come down or you can come up. We only live an hour and a half, couple hours.
Yeah.
Yep. We could also meet in the middle, although there's not much.
There's nothing in the middle. Yeah, we're not meeting in the middle. I'll come to you probably, but yeah. So besides that, I'm going to be going to ChefConf in Chicago, almost all of next week. So this week to work. And then next week I will be in Chicago for that.
That's literally like all week. That's a long conference.
I fly out on Monday and I fly back. So Monday night I fly out and then Friday night I fly back. There's like a hack day on Friday that I'm not sure if I'm going to participate in, but I could if I wanted to. It's just like based on when I had to schedule my flight to come back.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
I went to Star Trek over the last couple weeks ago.
Cool.
It was a really good conference. It's in the movie theater in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And this time they had like a lot of theaters, but the theaters were kind of smaller because they had like, you know, Lazy Boys in them.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Which was kind of a detriment. I heard people snoring a couple times. And then they broadcast like that single talk into like three different rooms. So
gotcha.
It was pretty cool.
Okay.
And then at the end of it, you see Avengers or whatever. Every year is the different movie. It's usually the Marvel movie or the Star Trek movie was why it's called Star Trek.
The blockbuster is at the time.
Whatever the big shoot 'em up blockbuster is. So,
gotcha.
So that's cool.
So what's on your next sprint? You talked about what you had previously done, but we haven't talked about where you're going.
Yeah, my main concentration is going to be chronic. I'm going to start on the web. I just want to get the timer started and stop, and that shouldn't take much time at all. Hopefully, it just takes me, you know, one day. To finish that, and then work with the workflow stuff and API things, maybe transfer stuff over to work with GraphQL.
Cool.
Maybe work with you on the endpoints. So it's kind of my focus is just chronic and whatever comes up. And, you know, I want to get a running working timer as fast as humanly possible. So, That's whatever facilitates that is what I'll be working on.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we're getting pretty close. We'll be able to use this thing before too long. Besides just like booting it up in the simulator.
Have you used Bear Focus Timer?
No.
So
is that the one Matt sent us?
Yeah, so a colleague of ours sent us the Bear Focus Timer, and it's 99 cents, first of all. It's totally cheap. What attracted me at first was the UI. And I know this turned off you and a couple other people I talked to, but I thought the UI was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And actually looked like kind of the drawing type of backgroundy things that we talked about in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Except for it's everywhere, like all the buttons and stuff. Like I was like, no, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I love it. I can see why people don't like it, but I just loved how different it was. I haven't seen anything like it. But they did have a cool little feature on it. And the way to start the timers was basically to turn the phone over. So
like an hourglass.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. And so it gets you out of that distracted mode of like what's looking over at your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And the other cool thing is, at the end of a Pomodoro, it, you could do three things. You could make it vibrate. It would, it could play a song. And then the other thing that it could do is flash the flashlight. So since the flashlight's on the other side of your phone,
oh,
you know, it's pretty cool. So it's, I like that idea.
Yeah, those are good ideas.
Yeah, we might steal one or more of those ideas.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little pain in the butt, you know, and every time you flipped it back over, took it, you know, it would pause the timer, which is pretty cool.
Hmm.
And then I had some nice little, like after you finished the Pomodoro, it had some nice little graphics and stuff that made you kind of feel good, and you could like export the picture that the illustration that it gave you as, you know, into your photos and or share it on social media, which is blah blah blah, not that cool, but
yeah,
like the idea, like the illustration and all that's kind of made you feel, you know, good about it. So we may steal some of those some ideas.
Yeah, I'm not really I guess I'm not up on the like gamification of stuff,
right?
And that's what I mean. I guess maybe it's, I've heard it put as injecting whimsy into the things that you build, mm-hmm. to just make them enjoyable, mm-hmm. to use, which this is where a lot of like little subtle animations make things feel way, way nicer.
Yeah. I also think a lot of apps don't get it right in the fact that it happens all the time.
Yeah.
So like, I think that would be cool the first few times, or maybe your first day, or, you know, different spots along mm-hmm. the way. But, you know, all the time is like, you're never going to use that all the time. It's not going to make you feel good the second time as it did the first time. So
yeah.
I think if you hit that, if you strike that balance and not do it all the time, it gives your users kind of a better sense of fun, mm-hmm. of whimsicalness,
mm-hmm.
Of whimsy, you know, rather than doing it every single time. So I think, we should program some of that in, but, you know, make it a little more smart in the fact that it only happens the first time or whatever.
Yeah. And I'm not even talking about necessarily gaming it up. So one of my favorite mobile applications is the Square Cash app. And like, it is one of the most bare bones.
Sounds amazing.
You've used Square Cash.
Yeah, no, I know. I just, the funny thing is that's your favorite app.
I know, right? I just like to send money to people. Just take my money. But it has a nut, like the animations and the things that it does, like the feedback that you get from what you're doing is just feels really good. And it makes me, every time I use it, I'm like, yeah, this is good. This is fine. Like, I don't mind that I'm just bleeding myself dry right now, sending money to my mother-in-law. Like, yeah, it's all good.
Yeah. I feel the same way with Dropbox Paper, and we've talked about this mm-hmm. before.
Yeah.
But the kind of the little things it does, even just how it introduces new features or existing features in kind of a smart way is nice.
Yep. So those are good things to kind of think about. I think I've been looking for a book to read for a little while. I didn't end up following along with deep work with you guys. But I've been thinking about reading a lot more like UX stuff, like designy books,
mm-hmm.
just
mm-hmm.
to kind of mm-hmm. get myself in that sort of mindset. Cause I think, as developers, we sometimes, and you don't have this problem as much as a lot of developers do, just because you are a little bit more UX focused than most people. But I feel like we do have that thing where we're like, I'm solving problems, but I don't care how it's presented. And that just like, you run into this situation. And I know that I like aesthetic design, I sort of suck at. Like, I've just tried and tried and tried, and I've never really gotten very good at it. I think I've gotten a little bit better over time, but it's like, that's a hard thing for me to sort of grow in. But man, UX is one of those things that's like super important, and it doesn't have to like look beautiful. It doesn't have to be high fidelity. Like, you can figure UX problems out using low right. fidelity things, but get like a huge return on your investment of time by learning that stuff. And I think that's kind of where I'm at.
There's just standard things you can do that are just like, this is what, you know, like spacing and choosing fonts and colors and things like that are like,
mm-hmm.
those are things that you can learn. There's ideas and principles wrapped around that stuff. And, yeah, I'm the same way with you. Like, I want to start reading more about that, cause we're always reading development books and all, you know, learning that end.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get better as a designer, as a UX person, by just reading the principles behind some of that stuff.
Yep. I mean, it's just like any other skill. You have to figure out the rules, and then you have to use them until the rules are ingrained and you're ready to break them.
Yes, but, exactly.
And yeah, like I think as developers, we spend a lot of time learning like developer things, but I'm at the point now to where like for me to like really like go into a development thing and like learn something really neat, like for the most part, I have to be reading like computer science literature. Like I have to be digging into like nitty gritty stuff and like research papers to like really learn something that's like brand new to me. A lot of times, you know, I run into things that I'm like, oh yeah, that's a novel. I never thought to use that in that way sort of thing. Like I run into those, but those are fewer and far between nowadays. Like just because I've spent thousands and thousands of hours programming things and, you know, solving different problems. And I'm always like improving in those things. But a lot of times you improve over iteration and your gut kind of tells you that, oh, this is a little wrong and here's maybe why it's wrong, or maybe I should look up why this feels bad or that kind of thing. So yeah, I feel like investing in UX is going to be pretty big for me this year as a thing. So that's, I was trying to plan out what I'm going to be reading for the next like few months, and I think that's kind of where I'm at.
Nice. Great, man. Well, it's great chatting with you.
Yeah, it's been a good talk,
and I will talk to you in a few weeks. Yep.
Later.